They're Looking Veil, with Dr. Sherry Bainbridge and Leslie Arboleda and Leland Holkin, binding ancient energy and spiritual knowledge with scientific evidence. And away we go.
Welcome to the Looking Veil podcast. I am Dr. Sherry Bainbridge with my co-host, Leslie Arboleda, and Mr. Leland Holgate. And this is a fantastic episode that we're going to do a little bit more on world understanding. And throughout history, we have had things constantly change in our world. Our words change meaning over time. Our phrases change meaning over time. And I know that Leslie and Leland both know what I'm talking about, and I have no doubts that they can come up with some words and phrases. And let's just start with Leslie and see what she can come up with, because I know it can't be that hard.
Well, I think, it, you know, at different times we've talked about how sometimes in more larger populations and more general kind of experience, people have shortened phrases that have changed the meaning of what they actually were intended to mean. I know that one time you and I would discuss the idea of blood is thicker than water, and that people interpret that to mean that family bonds are more important than the other kinds of bonds. But the actual full quotation is that the blood of the covenant is thicker than the water of the womb. And so that actually means something dynamically different than what most people think they mean when they use that shortened phrase, right? It's really about understanding that the commitment that you make with your words and how you use the language that you use and the relationships you use is really a far more potent relationship than maybe the one that comes through the DNA and your family bond. So that's the one that first comes to mind when you ask the question, Sherry. How about you, Leland? You ever had any experience with something like that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the one thing that keeps hitting me, and it's funny because it was one of the conversations that Sherry and I were having about today's podcast, like what we were talking about in today's episode. And the one that I've heard people say all the time, and it's completely misunderstood, is I'll believe it when I see it. Of course, a lot of people base that on this visual evidence of something occurring versus the belief of it and the belief following the seeing it. And that's something obviously we're going to open up today, but that's the one I constantly check in with, because neuroscience alone, aside from the metaphysical side of things, absolutely has proven that belief is what creates the actual thing that you will see.
Oh, that's fascinating. One of the words I came up with, did you know nice used to mean ignorant?
Really? That's a new one. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. So part of the world that we are in that's so amazing is how everything seems to be designed to divide people. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have languages that divide us just simply by the different location, different cultured languages, and so on and so forth. The words changing meaning when it comes from one generation to the next. We've got divisions because of color and hair and size and shape and location. And I've been a real believer that what we need to do is completely let go of anything we thought was true and just start from scratch. Just let go, because everything about our world has some sort of corruption or influence. If I just influence and say no instead of yes, how much does that change in something? It changes the whole thing. And you guys remember being in school and you would sit in a circle and you'd start the one sentence. And by the time it got to the end, it didn't even come close to what it was. So it's super, super, super easy to do. One of them that has been one of my most favorite to use is the word culture. When we take this word and you divide it into two words, you have cult, and we know what a cult is. And then you have the word URE, which stands for legislation. So you're going to follow the legislation set forth by the cult for your culture. And the cult has such a hold on the governments. It has holds on belief systems. And in all honesty, when it comes to the point of people believing that, oh, so-and-so has access to information, but I don't, isn't true, because every one of us has access to that information. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about how we take the word belief and we buy so into something that even when we're shown absolute fact, people can still hold on to that belief. Now, if you take the word belief and we divide that into two words, be, you're just being, you're not moving forward, backwards, to the side, up, down, you're just being, and that's it. And leaf, L-I-E-F, stands for happy. So you're just going to be and be happy about it, not moving forward and backwards. It's not what happens to the chemistry in our body and to our brain. If we understand this, maybe we have a better understanding of how to get past it and go beyond it. It's very difficult for people to understand that everybody and everything has access to the knowledge in the energetic field. Secret society or school or belief system or a culture has no easier access than anybody else does. So when you feel that feeling that, oh, we're connecting, you connect in a million different ways, through song, through prayer, meditation, through relationships, through your relationship with our earth and our world. So if we go back, let's look at the word belief. And Leland, explain a little bit of the education that you're working on, because you're working on neurochemistry and your knowledge in that to help us better understand how we buy into and what happens to that chemistry when we learn something new and move beyond what we thought we knew before.
Yeah, absolutely. This is like some of the most fascinating stuff that I've really enjoyed studying over the past couple of decades is what is a belief? And a lot of people harbor the view that a belief is just something that is intellectual. Right? It's like you mentioned, it's accessible only by that person, not by me. And that in itself being a belief is actually completely untrue, because a belief is just a thought wired over and over and over and over again, electrochemically inside of your brain. That's how our neurons work, right? One neuron speaks to another neuron. And when it goes in between that separation, which is called a synapse, then there's this electrochemical transference where that electrical signal then becomes chemical. Well, the more that that gets practiced, the stronger that electrochemical signaling becomes. Therein becomes a belief, right? Let me give you a great example. You believe that this is the color gray. And why? Why do you believe that that's the color gray? Because since you were a child, you were shown this color and told gray, and then shown this color and told gray. So what happened? Over time, you built up the belief that this color is now gray. So you programmed that in, or your family programmed it in for you. But either way, that belief became a belief by reinforcing a thought or reinforcing an action, or what we call an action potential inside of neurochemistry. So that signal is an action potential. And the more you work that action potential, the more it becomes a habit or a belief, something that is cemented into your neurochemistry.
So this would also be why hypnotherapy works so well, because something is repeated, why meditation, and why commercials and other social conditioning things like songs are repeated over and over again. I was shocked when my four-year-old asked me, "Mommy, why do the songs keep repeating the same thing over and over and over again?" And this is from a four-year-old. Obviously, the way you've explained this, it is because neurochemistry-wise, biologically-wise, nerve-wise, syntax, all of this coming together, it really does work when we hear things that are repeated over and over and over again. Leslie, you deal more on the human design and development side. How do you find belief and people buying into things so strongly when they really don't have a basis for it. And then what happens to that person when they find out they, well, didn't believe the right thing, and now they are taking a step into more of what's correct at that time?
I think Leland really hit a key for me when he was describing the neurochemistry of it, because from a psychological perspective, people don't appreciate where those habits come from. And they are those repeated beliefs, and those beliefs are repeated thoughts. And people who aren't, as they say, putting a leash on the monkey mind, right, controlling the thought creation, the thought process, can't really fully reverse engineer where those beliefs and habits showed up. And so then they feel challenged by feeling empowered to change those habits and make those healthier choices, or to expand the perspective, right? That idea of expansion, again, it's when you were describing the neurochemistry, Leland, I was thinking about my grandfather had a farm in Alabama, and we didn't have a paved driveway. So depending on the environment and how wet the ground was and how many people were driving their wheels across the driveway in the same place, sometimes there would be these really deep ruts in the road. And we get into these ruts psychologically, we get into these ruts neurochemically, where we just don't fully understand that the wheels have been going in the same track over and over and over again. And if we want to take the mind, right, the proverbial car in a new direction, sometimes it requires a lot of effort to get out of those ruts. Sometimes it requires a lot of effort or a lot of empowered choices to really find ourselves choosing to explore that new information and generate new thoughts, and then take the thoughts over and over again, read those meditations on a daily basis, make those choices in a practical way until we've integrated them back into the meat suit, back into the body, where they no longer are requiring so much efforting, because they've now become these new habits, these new ways of being. And, you know, I think regardless of the direction we approach that change and expansion, there's so many different ways that we can really access being new versions of ourselves.
Leland, when people find out they're absolutely wrong about something, what happens neurochemically to us? I mean, I know we can describe that defensiveness right away, the desire to defend, even though you might know that somewhere along the line it really isn't adding up. What happens when we discover something like that we're totally wrong?
Yeah. So typical response or reaction by most of us is, like you said, we don't like to hear that we're wrong, right? So in that moment, those incoherent patterns inside of the heart and the brain will actually create something called cortical inhibition. So it shuts off all higher brain function. So most people, when they hear they're wrong, from that point forward, probably not going to say too coherent of something nice isn't usually going to come out of that. There's something that challenge that rises the cortical system, turns everything off in the higher brain function, then of course elevates your heart rate. So it's pretty
typical. It's like the pause button.
Yeah,
in an electrical surge, it's going to pause, and your electrical surge is going on in your desire to defend and hold on to.
Yeah, exactly. Your willpower, your decision making, logical functions, cognitive stuff, pause. That's a great way to say it. Like, yep, that's all paused right now.
Well, that's interesting, because it's exactly how I feel when that happens. And Leslie, what happens on your end in dealing with the human behavior side that people are so vehement about their stance, even against a lot of proof?
You mean, why do people dig their heels in when they clearly are presented with all kinds of evidence to invalidate what they thought was true?
Exactly.
I think there's lots of different reasons for that. Some of it's programming and conditioning, right? My great-great-grandma told me it was that way, and then my great-great-grandma said so, and my great-grandma, and so on and so forth, right? So there's some of that epigenetic kind of just really deeply ingrained, what we're calling beliefs, that are really more practice patterns over generations. But also, I think there's that there's some real validation to understanding how our brains function, right? Like from a polyvagal perspective, right? Like we have kind of a hierarchy of how we can use our brain, and people think the brain is this one thing and it's used for thinking, when really it's there's so many different layers to how we can support ourselves, but also how we can grow from ourselves. And you know, your brain isn't really focused on growing when you're in survival mode. And I think, like Leland said, we kind of revert back to those primal ways of being when we feel like we've been challenged or we feel like we've been shut down from a information perspective. Your body doesn't really care how well you're digesting your food if you need to get away from the saber-toothed tiger. But in 2024, it's not a whole lot of saber-toothed tigers walking around. And our brain sometimes still goes into that mode. And then we're not open. We're not able to use that, the processing part, right? The thinking part, the willingness to be open to the new information when we've kind of shut down from a biological perspective and from a psychological perspective.
Yeah, one of the reasons I chose and very much out of a choice as a child to be very open-minded with because I saw the people around me were so closed-minded. And it just didn't make sense to me when you have all this proof and there's no thought. It's a ego. It becomes part of that false ego that I cannot think any differently or somehow I'm wrong. Well, I'm telling everyone out there in the audience, you're not wrong. There are millions of truths. You can, I've done it before where you can cut an onion a million different ways. You can say something numerous different ways. There's just so many different ways you can see and view things. The more we get to view in a different way, the broader our perspective becomes. And if we have the 8 billion people on this earth, you're gaining a broader perspective, this might be a threat to those who are in power because then we would think we have that ability to have power. And I'm a full believer that if we come together and we have a better understanding and we can get on the same page with some things, we really can change the world and we can certainly change the energy. Well, accepting the truth about our world can be a whole nother different thing because we've been taught to look, and through generations, like Leslie said, taught to look at things in only very specific ways. Well, throw out what you knew before and let's start from scratch dealing with as much truth as we can. And we live in this world simulation. It is a level of technology. And those that want to use the word God, God didn't go through eons of time without discovering technology, period. And in numerology, that technology is viewed as 0 to 9 ability for coding rather than the 0 to 1 we have on Earth. And if you just think about that for a few minutes, you realize how expansive that can be in your creativity and what you're able to do and explore. So let's take a look about how we can better view our world as a real computer or technology, and we're a technology. So if we're a technology, our world is a technology, the universe is a technology, and we understand that we speak to technology in kind of computer terms, then can we not use this to our advantage for aiding and influencing and manipulating energy to help us manifest and design life in a way that we can have the reality that's really working for us? Because we do have whatever reality we choose to look at, as long as you're within the rules of this physical plane. And there are definitely rules.
Depending on your platform, please like, share, and comment, as drawings will occur throughout the year.
So you guys, what are some of the things? I've been messing around with meditation in adding computer technology and AI even. I have a ChatGPT in my meditation where I'm putting things in the line to get things energetically started for the computer system to speak to me better. What ideas do you have, Leslie?
I think it's I think you said a couple of things that really sparked some ideas for me. The first one is, what's the subset of choices you're even choosing your words from, right? Like if we're using a binary system, those ones and zeros, like computers are using, a binary language of ones and zeros can literally generate any image that a programmer can imagine and understands how to utilize. If you think about it in that idea of like a base 9 system, right? Well, how does that increase the number of possibilities that we can even choose from? And then how do we learn the language in order to program the computer in this analogy, right? How do we, where are we pulling those bits of information from in order to even create the simulation or the experience, right, that we're really living? I think, you know, again, from a psychological perspective, I tell people all the time, the story you're living is the result of the thoughts that you're having. And so if you don't like the story, if you don't like the experience, if you don't like the actual thing that's going on for you in the day to day, figure out some new thoughts to generate a new story and then have a new experience with it. That's the first thing that sort of came to mind. And then also, if we're part of this infinite system, that really means that anything we want to create, we can create. And so back to that empowered perspective of, are you really willing to be in charge of creating the experience that you're actually capable of creating? Or is it more of a falling back into that comfort space of, even if you're not satisfied, at least it's familiar? Because I think that's a lot of times where people find themselves burdened by choosing to not be expanded, have an expanded experience, is because it's just easier to be dissatisfied with the familiar than it is to be empowered to create something new.
Yeah, you have no idea what Pandora box you're going to open up because the level of responsibility alters and changes. And now you've got to figure out that and step up to that new reality that you have. Leland, what's your thoughts on this computer technology that we are living within?
Yeah, no, it's funny because this is exactly why I created a lot of the breath practices that I do, is this is kind of the way that I've viewed the universe ever since I stepped into the self-development space and really started opening up consciousness and what that is and working inside of that. So working from the belief of working on the electrical signal, which is my thought, and the emotional signal, which is my emotion, right? And that electromagnetic signal, just like a computer, is what's sending out the true belief, right? And in that way, just like Leslie had mentioned, my base program is to always deal with the belief that's in the background, the unconscious belief that you're not even aware of, right? And the only way for me to ever really tap in and do that is to jam in with things like 60 Seconds to Freedom. That's exactly why I created 60 Seconds to Freedom, is it takes less than a minute to literally dip in and allow yourself to feel that base level program, which overall is love, bliss, all the words that we can think of. And in that moment, you get to experience that and then layer on and build. What experience do you want to create from this now? Like, what do you want to experience next?
Have you guys noticed how common it is when you get ready to go someplace? It's super, super common for people to think, oh, do I have to? Do I really have to go? Are you sure? This is partly what we're talking about in opening up that door, even though there's a bit of discomfort, because what we learn and what we expand on makes life so different. And we are here as three people, three human beings. We have our own opinions. We have our own beliefs. We have our own life that we've lived. And we're coming together to also share with everyone that even if we disagree, it's okay to disagree. I find in the perspective that I've taken on over time, that my life is so much more fun. If I'm out on a walk, I could be healing trees and paying attention to a bird singing, a hawk that flies in front of me, you know, has spiritual type tribal meanings to me. I believe that fairies exist and Sasquatch and many other beings that live in this multidimensional, multi-existent world that we're trying to figure out being kept in the dark. So in playing around a little bit with this as a type of simulation, and you guys remember Star Trek where they go in and they get to be in a simulation. And now we've got those glasses that you can wear and you can do 3D stuff that is really cool. I wonder if that's going to be a part of this in designing your own simulation to make it funner and more enjoyable. When you guys do your meditations, what are some of the things that come to mind that might be helpful in connecting up with this simulation and aiding it in moving energy in the direction that we would like? Leland, what thoughts do you have on that?
Ooh, see, this is one of my favorite ones because I like to think in the way of a lot of the heart math stuff that I've studied for the past few years. And with that, they speak to relational energetics, right? And what we know is there are two forms of patterns. There are incoherent patterns, those really jagged patterns like you see on somebody that's stressed out or whatever. And then you have those coherent patterns, those sine waves that are really nice and hill-like. And so focusing on that, whenever I think of how I can either elevate consciousness or add my beautiful piece to whatever's happening inside of this joint creation that we're a part of, I just like to focus on coming from the heart and creating those coherent patterns. So whatever it is that I'm creating from that authentic space, just being, and again, that base level program of where can I connect with my heart, feel the most love, the most joy, the most excitement, the most, all these positive regenerative emotions, which puts me inside of that coherence energy, right? And what we know is coherence can overwrite incoherent patterns. It can't work the other way. Incoherence cannot overwrite coherence, but coherence can overwrite incoherence. And it's funny because when you look at some of the studies that they've done, they put four people in a room and the one person had no idea, but the other three were instructed to occasionally move into this coherent way of breathing and create these coherent patterns. And in those moments, they noticed the fourth person would move into coherence as well. So that's my constant focus is whatever I'm going to create right now, let it be playful and imaginative, but let it also come from that authentic love space.
And that authentic space you're also talking about involves emotion, because emotion is one of the biggest divine communicators we have in this world. Leslie, what's your thoughts on this?
When I think about emotion, right, I think we've all probably seen or heard at one point someone talking about emotion as energy and motion. And so I think in our, especially in the, you know, the spiritual realms and in these more enlightened communities, there's lots of times where people are talking about things like, I'm sending love and light, right? And I can't say that phrase without my face doing the thing, but it's not because I don't believe in either of those things. It's because, again, I think a lot of times people are using words without really understanding what they're talking about. And I think we may have touched on this in a previous episode, but when you have a thought, it actually creates a photon storm inside your brain. Photons are little itty bitty pieces of light. And so when we're talking about I'm sending light or I'm changing the light of the world, it's really about mindfully creating new thoughts in our brains, right? And as Leland referred to, the coherence that happens through the beating of the heart that's generated and controlled by the breath, the rate of our breathing, right? That creates a magnetic field that's actually at this point in 2024 able to be measured. And so when we're talking about love and light, we're talking about having new thought processes that create this different magnetic field that can only attract into our experience, our life, our story, that which resonates, right? Again, like Leland said, from a physics perspective, a higher frequency can't actually be brought down, but a lower frequency can absolutely be raised. And so if we're thinking about people like jamming our vibe or cramping our groove or whatever, you know, language we want to use that's clearly not from the 70s, but mine is, right? It's really about understanding in this human body, in this physical vessel that we're walking around with, emanating a frequency of our own. Sometimes it can take some time on the clock to raise the frequency of the people that we're in relationship with. And so that can require some effort, that can require some patience on our own part. And so sometimes it's just easier for us to change our frequency to that place where we find resonance with someone who's not really expressing themselves in that high frequency way that we were. But when we hold our frequency, when we hold our breath rate, when we know what we know, like Leland was talking about, it can't help but create that resonance. It can't help but amplify that coherence that actually does feel better. That is that groovy love feeling that we're all really ultimately here to experience. It's our birthright as humans to be healthy, joyful, and abundant. And when we're not having that actual experience in our day-to-day life, it's not because we're doing things wrong, like you talked about earlier, Sherry. It's because we're making misaligned choices that pull us away from who we're really here to be and what we're really here to do. And that's okay. If that's working for you, do more of it. But the truth of the matter is, that's not the best expression of who you are. It's not the best expression of who I am. And we're not, I think, we're not serving our role in the evolution of the collective when we make those choices. But as confronting as it is for folks in my circles to hear sometimes, it is a choice. It is a choice to go low. It is a choice to say, nope, I'm not going to be who I am because it's just easier or it requires less effort, or I'm going to use the language that people use instead of continue to use the language I use and educate them on the higher frequency of the words, the higher frequency of the expression, the better way of feeling.
And I love what you're talking about when you're talking about the importance of the word being used. I went through learning how to write my own mantras, and this part is very key. And in my Reiki work, when I teach it and so forth, whenever you're using words to aid in manifestation, one of my favorite words to add in is the word gentle. Bring it about gently. And this can easily be overlooked because the universe is listening and it wants to help us out and it wants us to move forward and to achieve and to broaden and be a valuable member to creation. So when you're using these words, you can get taught in what seems like negative ways. Sometimes you're meant to go through having to learn a harsh lesson, and there's no word getting around it. It's part of your path to do it. But when we can have this influence, using the word gentle would be something I would throw out for people to do. What would be some of the words that you guys would use that you feel have a vibrational and frequency component to aid in keeping us from falling into the pitfalls of making our situation worse rather than better?
Yeah, that's a really good one. And you know, one of the ones that comes to mind right away, which is more of a phrase than a word, is give myself permission, is something that I use all the time with myself and also with my clientele as well, as everything. And to Leslie's point, oh my God, it was such an epic way that you said that. You literally broke down what a belief is. It's a set of choices that you're making over and over and over and over and over and over again. So those choices that we make, for me, I allow myself to give myself permission to make the right choice for me in the moment, or give myself permission to feel the feels in the moment. Ooh, that sucked. You didn't like that. Yeah. Okay. Well, we don't have to continue to feel this. Now let's make a new choice and choose not to suffer. Let's choose not to sit in the sulfur pit and just in our woes because of what just happened. So for me, it's always focusing on giving myself permission.
How excellent, because in hypnotherapy, we deal with this through past life regressions and everything. We all, for some strange reason, require giving ourselves permission to do something. If we don't have permission, we're going to believe we can't do it, whether we're looking for that externally or internally. Leslie, what would be your suggestions in this?
I think it's important to also give ourselves grace for the secondary gain, right? The stuff that, like, when we were making what seems like really crappy choices over and over and over again, especially to the outside observer, it's still serving some purpose for us, or we wouldn't do it, because the absolute fundamental nature of a human being is we are never doing anything we don't want to do. And I think that's, again, potentially confronting for folks to actually have to, like, integrate and fully take responsibility for. But one of my teachers used to use a phrase that I have now integrated into my own practice, which is when she was getting ready to tell you something that she was pretty sure you weren't going to really want to hear, she would say, "I lovingly and gently remind you that." And then she'd insert this thing that otherwise would just be like this really confronting thing that, like Leland was saying earlier, people will shut down their brain and they're not interested in hearing the feedback then, because it's not loving or gentle. But even if you're just using the wording to let people know, I'm about to probably say something that might feel a little harsh and confronting, but I'm bringing it to you from a place of gentle love, because I want you to be gentle and loving with yourself. It's profound how much more easy it is for people to then be willing to take on those hard conversations, those personal inquiries that really do help us be better folks. You certainly know, Sherry, I'm kind of hardwired to be a little shocking, right? It's in my human design, right? It comes from a place of initiating folks to be a better version of themselves. And I quantum human design is a relanguaging of the traditional system, or my teacher went into the lab and actually measured the frequency of the words, the language, and chose to relanguage the traditional system with these higher frequency words for just this reason, because it absolutely entrains people to be a better version of themselves instead of get stuck in that. I love that analogy, stuck in the sulfur pit of like, oh, I made this crap choice, I'm just going to feel crappy about this crap choice, instead of, I made this choice that I realize now did not serve my highest interest, did not help me be a better version of myself. And I'm willing to step out of the pit. I'm willing to be in inquiry to be a better version of who I know I can be.
And I love your suggestion on how to approach someone with a difficult subject, because people, you don't even give, you've been processing, you know you're going to approach this person with this information, and they're totally blindsided. They have no idea. So when you give them that idea, you lay the groundwork for them to put themselves in a healthier processing position in order to be able to do that. And I love the words gentleness and permission. And grace, especially grace, because we need this for ourselves too. Have you guys ever experienced, I know you have, and you're going to crack up on this one. You ever have that moment where you're thinking about something and you think about something you did decades ago and your Adam's apple drops down to your stomach and you feel that embarrassing, humiliating pain of how stupid could I have been? Why did I do that? The other people involved probably have totally forgotten, but you're holding on to it going, I remember this. This had such an emotional impact on me. And isn't that what we remember the most, is our feelings and our emotions about something better than the words? So I'm going to venture to say the technology we're in must also be the same.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because I've had those moments too, where you think of something ridiculous, right? Where you're like, you think of the thing you said to the dude in sixth grade. Where the hell did that come from? But I've done that to myself before, where all of a sudden that comes out of nowhere. And it reminds me of what I've been studying lately and how amazing it is and how programmable we are. Yeah, so for me, this happens quite often, and it's so funny because it actually happened recently, and it always goes back to something that you said to the dude in like sixth grade, right? silly as crap, that's decades old, but for some reason that's important to me in this moment, and it really tunes me into the discussion we're having now. It really it really holds a lot of weight, like you mentioned, where your emotions set in a lot with your memory, right? That holds a lot inside of psychology and in neuroscience. Your emotions, your amygdala, the alert center, whether it's good or bad, is burning that memory into your brain so that you can remember, whether it's like, ooh, don't do that again because that was stupid, that sucked, which there it is, right? The brain remembered, like, oh God, that was dumb. You just sounded stupid. Don't ever do that again. So of course that moment came up for me because that was an important moment for the brain to remember. So it's funny. I constantly remind myself that the emotions that I'm recording right now are the program that I'm going to run the following days. So something for me to keep in mind.
Interesting. What about you, Leslie?
I think about it a little bit, and I am a sci-fi geek, and among other things, the science, right? And so I think about it kind of in this idea of when we're having those moments, it's like, oh, man, I wish I had a time machine. I wish I could go back and do that differently, right? Like, how many times have you heard someone say, I wish I could go back and do that differently? And I tell my kids all the time, we don't have a time machine for the past, but we are the current past version of the future of our future selves, right? So we totally have a time machine for the future. And that's just our living in the moment and making new choices, because our future self is at one day going to look back at this current version of us and be like, oh, do I wish I'd done that differently? Or am I glad that I did what I did? And so I think it's helpful, again, back to that idea of giving ourselves grace, but also being empowered not to make the same silly choices over and over again, but to learn from those past versions of ourselves so that this current version of ourselves can be a version that the future version of ourselves is really proud of, one that we feel empowered by, and not have to persistently be in that conversation of, God, I can't believe I did that again, you know, but really like, wow, I'm super proud that I did that differently, whatever that is.
Right. And we have a way of holding on to these things for sure. And I know letting go of them is part of our healing journey to be able to do that. Things that are so insignificant and unimportant that affect us clear from second, sixth grade, fifth grade. It's unbelievable how much we hold on to things. But when we look at emotion being a divine communication, at that time, Leland, that you had that rise up in you, was there any type of communication that you could take from that in your thinking that was similar? Was it rising up to completely point out you're thinking the same in this, or you're risking the same thing happening? Do you have any connections that you're able to make on that?
Yeah. No, it's definitely in that way. I like how you said that, Leslie, that it's a really great experience. You're re-experiencing it right now again, because it's your chance to now experience it differently, perhaps. So do you want to use that experience and give yourself grace, which I think that's one of the best words ever, Leslie. Give yes. yourself grace in that moment and pay attention to that signal that's coming from the universe, from source, is actually giving you a chance to be graceful with yourself and recognize, yeah, you didn't do that quite right. You know, there's really no wrong way to do it, like you mentioned, but maybe there's a better way or a more efficient way for you to do that. Here's your shot. Here's your chance. Don't look back on yourself in shame and guilt and blah, blah, blah. I'm so stupid. Don't do that. Just look at it and recognize I could have done that differently and then do it differently.
Because emotion is such a communication point, and also I believe a communication point in the technology that we're living in. What are some of the things that we can do in our meditations in using our emotions to connect to this, whatever it is that we're a part of and would like to figure out so we can sort of manipulate it?
I think I could pull some great things from NLP regarding that topic, right? Like we have these predicates these systems that we're just kind of naturally hardwired for. And while we're all a unique once in a lifetime cosmic event, There's only so many different ways that we can interact with our five senses, or maybe our six, if you want to think about them. You know, that intuition is another means of feedback. But there's lots of different ways that we can combine and use those five different senses in a way that really serves us. And I think, like Leland was saying, when you have those moments, I have one of those experiences on the broadcasting end, where I kind of did that shocking thing that I felt this intuitive thing that I knew was true. And I said to the person in a rather unkind and not so gentle way, oh, well, I think I basically just called BS. And I said it like I thought it. And then I immediately saw how it just landed in a really like unpleasant way for the person. And I went, oh, shit. Like I wasn't wrong. Right. My intuition was correct, but the transmission was definitely not right. And the transmission was definitely not kind. And so I'm sure if I were to find that person on Facebook and ask them about this, they would probably not even remember this random 2-minute interaction on a Friday night, one night. Right. But for me, it's a really potent point of reference for me to be clear and take responsibility for the transmission, not to make myself wrong. Because again, I know on an intuitive level, the information was correct, but the way that I chose to transmit the information created this emotional response in this other person that made the transmission totally invaluable. Like the insight that I was sharing didn't land on that person. That person rejected entirely any potential insight because of the emotional experience they were having. On the flip side of that, I can remember being on the receiving end of someone kind of doing that same thing to me. And I am still in relationship with that person. And I mentioned it, I don't know, maybe a year ago, something that happened 20 years ago. And he was like, oh my God, I can't believe I said that. That was a terrible thing to say, right? Like he had no memory of it at all. I have a very clear memory of it because it created this, it was already an emotional experience for me, and it created this bigger emotional experience inside of me. And so I think it's just really powerful and potent for us to notice, you know, a lot of times emotions get a bad rap, like someone's being too emotional or whatever that is. And rather than understanding that it's really, it's a part of that feedback loop of how the energy is in motion, how the energy is moving in our bodies, in our brains, in our relationships, in our experiences. And then how do we go be better versions of ourselves with that feedback, with that information, and not lower the frequency with the shame and the guilt like Leland was referring to. You know, I use sound healing as one of my modalities in my toolbox. And I tell people all the time, vibration and frequency isn't just some woo-woo language that people don't, again, kind of like the love and light, maybe people don't fully understand, but the vibration is the note. The frequency is the octave. And if you're only taking responsibility for your vibration without fully taking responsibility for your frequency, sometimes you find yourself in the middle of a song or a symphony that just isn't your jam. And it's like, well, I hate this, rather than, oh, I'm in charge of changing this. I'm the orchestra and the symph. I'm the orchestra and the conductor, right? I'm all of those things. And I think emotion is a really great feedback system when we understand it, and then we understand how to be empowered by it instead of crippled by it.
This is one of the exciting things about looking at life from our different perspectives, is that everything has some sort of message or guidance. Even if there's no message, that's a message in and of itself. Right? So you take on this wonderment, and it does really help when you have that type of perspective, because you're looking within yourself for emotion to rise, because emotion tells you how you're thinking. And if it's a negative emotion, then it's telling you your thoughts are getting you to a negative place. And that's something to change. I've had people tell me that, oh, I can't change my thoughts. You know what? It's not true. You can change your thoughts on a dime. If I'm in front of somebody and they're being terribly rude, for me, I'm going to throw up a bunch of gifts in my aura, imaginary loving gifts. I did a practical application on that before in one of the previous shows, just because that gets the energy going in a positive direction and puts my head very present with what's happening. My take on that is it then becomes a game. Because now I want to find out how to diffuse that person in the kindest, most loving, gentle way possible. And it's usually something really simple, even with your tone of voice. I had a gentleman come in one time in a job that I was working, and he was very upset. And so I just used my tone of voice. Sir, please, I'm trying to help you out. And just that, please, came across and his whole demeanor changed. He's now processing something being said to him in such a different way that it creates that shock factor we love so much, Leslie. You know, that wasn't expected. I was supposed to fly off the handle. Well, we can do the same thing in what we're dealing with our technology that we're living in and the words that we are using, such as gentle and graceful and permission and empowerment. These are such amazing, phenomenal words. What would be some of the visualizations that you guys might use? Because I'll use the search line and I'll put a search in, or I'll use like ChatGPT and I'll put some words in there for it to search, or throw out some loving, kind, emotional energy of money. I would like money to come to me. Who wouldn't? So I'm throwing out that wonderful emotional energy of the excitement of having money come to me easily and me not having to work so hard to get it. So that emotion and the words being put forth, and I'm visualizing the spark of the particles within the machine communicating with each other to put me in a position where money's flowing my way. What would be something you guys would do, and how would you visualize it to help people in the audience have a better understanding as we're just throwing this out in our new recipe in a kitchen of making ingredients for meditation and affirmations?
Yeah, no, I love it. It's visualization is such a powerful tool, especially in the way of evoking emotions, right? So if you think of it in that way, if I'm trying to create something by way of abundance, or whether it involves money, or it's just a completely abundant event, or whatever it is that I'm looking to create, I'm visualizing the end result, seeing the party that's thrown for, you know, whatever that you were looking to create, who's going to be there. And I get super specific and that's when it gets really fun, right? Is make your visualization super specific and super fun. Who's going to be there? Who's going to be there partying with you? What are they going to be wearing? What are they going to bring you as a gift, as a congratulations? Like, this is amazing. Start to think of like all those really fun little points, you know, and then it becomes like a Sims game almost. Like, you're creating the emotional experience before it happens by Leslie and Sherry show up with these amazing gifts and they brought food and all this other stuff. So I make it really fun for myself when I'm creating this visual picture of whatever I'm wanting to create. And then in that way, it helps me to elevate my emotion to that experience. And then of course, law of resonance states that if I'm resonating at that frequency constantly, then of course it has to become a law in my life.
What about you, Leslie?
I think I'm thinking about it from a human design perspective. There's an aspect of our hardwiring where we are in alignment to manifest in a general way, or we're in alignment to manifest in a specific way. And I think a lot of times, without understanding what really resonates with us in that unique cosmic way, we sometimes make ourselves wrong, because if we're here for that specific manifestation, like Leland was talking about, like I can see the exact people, I can see what's on their tray, I can see what the congratulation card says, right? But we're really more in alignment with that general manifestation of I will feel this way, right? It will ultimately make this experience for me in a general kind of way. Sometimes we feel like we're failing at the manifestation part, right? Rather than understanding that we just haven't quite aligned to how to manifest for ourselves specifically. And that again, that visualization, I love a good visualization. I have a great, like, I have like a movie playing in my head along with like this subtitle. Like I hear the words and I see the picture and I feel the feelings. But I only recently in the last couple of years learned that that's not what's happening inside everyone else's brain, right? Like that's not how it works for everyone else. And so if I were to go tell people that they should, right? If I were to should on people, they should do it the way I do it because it works for me, without understanding that there's kind of this unique combination of things that can really only work for a person when they have this particular level of self-awareness. And again, this bold willingness to explore what's right for them, what's aligned for them, what's really resonates with what not just who they are, but what they want to create in the world. I think that's a lot of times where people find themselves feeling shamed and feeling like they're not good and feeling like they're failing at life and all of that stuff. Like for me, failure is not one of the F words. It's a aspect of an experience. It's a description of part of the learning cycle. And I myself am really hardwired to manifest and to model for folks the success and the failures, because success means I'm doing it really well and failure means I'm learning what to do differently. And neither of those is bad or good, but they are part of the process. And if we're not willing to let the whole process manifest in our experience, it can feel, well, quite frankly, incomplete, right? Like it's not, it's just, we're not there yet.
Right? Yeah. I love what you touched on too, Leslie, about, and what it sounded to me like what you were saying is you have to get expectations out of it. Whatever happens, it just happens. That is the way of things. It just is how it is. And not to attach, you know, the shame on me, I'll loathe myself because I didn't do that well. We've learned this is all just a learning experience. You make so many failures in your life, if you want to use that word, that it's so overwhelming that you're either going to succumb to fall into self-shame or you're going to get over it and recognize that we're just in an educational institution and we're just learning here. But one of the key things is not holding on to that expectation, always being aware that you have things to learn. And sometimes you're meant to be wrong. Sometimes you're meant to be right. Sometimes you're meant to be both at the same time, or you can have several right choices before you. There's so many possibilities, which is why really learning who you are, becoming very authentic and genuine with who you are, because that brings up that divine communication. And at this moment, we're going to take just a moment break and move to the practical application, and we'll be right back. You did hear that Leslie has a movie going on in her head. Well, I have something a little bit different. I have a cartoon. I always have. Certain situations, everything kind of gets animated in my head, and it makes life rather fun and humorous, except at the times that I have the cartoon going and it's kind of like not necessarily an appropriate time. And I might be cracking up inside, let a giggle out, and I probably shouldn't. We are all different and we require different groups of things to help us heal at different levels. And when we talk about healing, we talk very much about healing the mind in how we're thinking, healing the areas that we have misinformation, if we can, healing our emotions. We come here to kind of lose ourselves and then rediscover ourselves as we are perfecting little areas of who we want to be and what place we're going to take in the universe. Well, one of the things I find as our practical tip here is there is a technique that is kind of helpful. And like I said, a group of things always helps. And it is that group of things that you're searching for that will work with and for you. That's why we explore and we research and we learn and we try new things. Try this technique. If you're wanting to, say, lose weight or correct a bad habit or a habit that's affecting you in your life that you would like to get better at, write down a list of 50, 60, 70, however many words you can think of, because words have vibrational components to it. And when we write it down, there is a connection with our subconscious, our conscious mind, our mind, body, spirit, all helping to get on the same page. And it's very helpful for our mind to understand and our body to understand changes that we want to make, because we train our mind and our body to be exactly the way it is most of the time. So write down everything about whatever this thing is you want to change that you are being affected by, you can't do, your feelings that you have. Be real, be raw. Write it down. Now make another list. Make another list of what you will be able to do when you make this change in your life. Okay, however long and as many words and whatever you can think of, and be raw and honest. And in the third list, I want you to list all the things, if you were right now what you wanted to be, how you would be feeling, behaving, what were those changes that's going to happen in your life that are realistic. Be realistic and see if making these three lists help you in focusing. Thank you so much. I hope you're enjoying. Welcome back, everyone. So we've been talking about coming up with meditations and so forth, and our approach to how we're going to do this. And I'm going to ask you guys in the next episode, if you came up with a type of technology little meditation that contains what we talked about, the permission and the gentleness, and share it yourself, and we'll throw it on the website for people to check out. So if you guys don't mind, we'll just all three come up with a little bitty meditation and throw that out there. Are you guys game for this?
Sure.
Wonderful. Fantastic. We've so enjoyed having this conversation with you guys today, and would love it if you would comment and send your ideas in how you're adjusting and evolving and modernizing your meditation to become more effective with the reality and the truth that we're living in. So you guys have a fabulous month this month, and we will all see you next month. Namaste. See you guys. Thank you. Bye.
Brought to you by Holistic Collaboration. Visit the website at thelookingveil.com for more information.
We are not licensed doctors or mental health professionals, and the podcast is for informational purposes only. It is not to be considered a substitute for medical or mental advice, diagnosis, or treatment.